Talk about this city. Some of these things, you know, God kind of leaves mysterious in purpose. Like, for instance, with this city, he says, you know, the name of this woman is a mystery. And he calls her Babylon. I mentioned, you know, with the number.
What does Babylon mean?
It's Babylon.
It's a place, but it was a place.
Where at?
It's an old city. It's, remember the first class?
I was
Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babylon.
I forget where it is. Like, is it in Israel somewhere?
No, it's in the Middle East.
Is it Red?
I think probably, yeah, that's Iraq or somewhere. There's not a modern, you know, Babylon where people go to there. I believe Saddam Hussein is talking about rebuilding ancient Babylon. And he's got pictures of engravings of himself and Nebuchadnezzar with their faces side by side. There's a book out on it. It's called Babylon Something. It's written by Richard Dyer. I've got the book. But Nebuchadnezzar wants to rebuild Babylon. And some, you know, some take that and say that this this prophecy about Babylon is literal Babylon. But however, John says, you know, his name is a mystery, and then calls him Babylon. But anyway, let's get into this. Okay.
Chapter
17. We finished 16. I'm going to jump back a little bit. But 17 verse 1. One of the seven angels who had the bowls came and says, "Come here, I'm going to show you the judgments of the great whore who sits on many waters. Kings of the earth have committed immorality with her, and those who dwell on the earth are made drunk by the wine of her immorality. And she carries him away in the spirit and sees a woman sitting on a beast full of blasphemous names and seven heads and ten horns. Who might that beast be?" Same beast we saw in chapter 13. "And the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet, full of gold and precious stones. She had a cup in her hand full of abominations and unclean things. Verse 5, upon her forehead a name was written, a mystery: Babylon the Great, mother of harlots and of abominations of the earth." I think the way the King James reads the word mystery is part of her name. There's a little discussion on that in the footnotes of the NET Bible, if anybody has it. And it's more likely that the of the grammar that mystery is not part of her name, but he's saying her name was a mystery. And it's Babylon the Great. So in other words, the woman is not Babylon, but mysteriously her name, the name Babylon tells you something about the true identity. Okay? "I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. When I saw her, I wondered greatly." The angel says, "Why do you wonder? I'll tell you about her and the beast who carries her, who's had seven heads and ten horns. The beast which you saw was and is not, and is about to come up out of the abyss and go to destruction. Those who dwell on the earth will wonder, whose names are written in the book of life, when they see the beast." Yeah, any questions?
Yeah, back here, I'm sorry to back up on you, Willie. It says, "And upon her forehead was a name written, mystery." Okay, and they have a footnote in here, 2 Thessalonians 2:7, which was what Brother Mendoza was talking about. It says, "For the mystery of iniquity doth already work, only he who now letteth will let, until he be taken out of the way."
Okay. I do not see that as being the same mystery, just because they use the word. The word mystery is used several different places. I wouldn't make that connection that the that footnote makes.
Sorry.
But anyway, she's a city. Jump down to verse 18. "The woman who you saw is the great city." It's very clear. It calls her, it uses the word the great city, I think, about six or seven times between these two chapters.
So the woman's a city?
The woman is a city, yes. It's very clear on that. Okay. Now he's comparing the city to ancient Babylon, which was a wicked city. And whoever this woman is, he's comparing it with that. So people who want to, you know, identify the woman as Roman Catholicism is a very popular one, or other things. I don't see. He calls her a city. The thing about identifying it as Roman Catholicism grows out of the Reformation. When they started coming out of the Catholic Church, Martin Luther and these guys, and started what we call Protestants today. They identified the Pope as the Antichrist, and the Roman Catholic Church is the Great Whore of Babylon. So almost no scholars today would do that, but it's carried over a lot in just popular theology. But it's very clear to call her a great city, over and over. He talks about her as a city. The two major candidates for this city that I think have any plausibility are Jerusalem and Rome. Third one, which I said is now becoming popular again, is literal Babylon. But I think it destroys the whole thing about it name being a mystery and all this. He's talking about literal Babylon. Traditionally, Rome has had the strongest support for a number of reasons. He says the woman sits on seven hills. Verse 9. And Rome was known as the city which sits on seven hills.
How many hills?
Seven hills. And especially, I mean, a lot of scholars who a lot of your more liberal scholars and those who do not see Revelation as being something future, they want to tie it all to events going on in John's day, you know, saying, well, this is just symbolic of stuff going on at the time. There's a lot of people over that. Identify it as Rome, as, you know, the great city which ruled the earth at his time, you know. It was ruling at that time, I mentioned. And Rome was, I mean, where they persecuted the headquarters of the Roman Empire.
That's Poland.
Which,
Someone should answer that.
Somebody
wants to. That's the third time that's on time.
Somebody wants to check it out.
It might be important.
You know, the Romans did persecute the church at that time. You see that going on. I think, did we talk about Peter? Really about it. Peter called Babylon Rome. I talked about. Anyway.
I'll leave it here next time.
Okay, the end of 1 Peter. He's in Rome and he symbolically calls it Babylon. You know, people calling him, maybe they call a city, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah or something, just as a derogatory.
Yeah, call that.
You know, San Francisco, you know, oh, that's just a little Sodom and Gomorrah or something. A derogatory title. Extra biblical references refer to Babylon, to Rome as Babylon also. Suggest maybe that was possibly a well-known designation that the early church understood Babylon as a reference to Rome. It became the world capital of idolatry, as Babylon had been, supposedly. And those are the major reasons. Most importantly, the Seven Hills thing, and then him saying, the one which you saw is a great city, verse 18, the end of it, which reigns over the kings of the earth. And Rome was presently at that time reigning. Okay? I think that's where probably most conservative scholars go with Rome.
Why did you say Jerusalem and Rome?
Okay, well, I'm the case for Jerusalem. Okay, first of all, I mentioned this, the name is a mystery. Okay, verse 5, it says the name was a mystery. Verse 9. Okay, verse 9, here is the mind which has wisdom. the seven heads are seven mountains. Some seem to think that he's, the fact that he's saying, you know, you need wisdom to figure this out, would seem to take away Rome, because it was obvious. I mean, Rome was well known as the city which sits on seven hills. So some say, well, look, he's saying you need wisdom to understand this would be pointless if it was that obvious. Okay? Okay, now let's go back to chapter 11. Talk about this in this chapter. The two witnesses are prophesying, and they're killed. Verse 7, they finish their testimony. The beast will come in and kill them. Verse 8, their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city.
Oh, yeah.
Which is spiritually called Sodom and Egypt. What is he talking about? Where also their Lord was crucified. Where was Jesus crucified? Jerusalem. Okay? Now, if here, the angel, I mean, his opinion of Jerusalem is Sodom and Egypt, it's only one more step to call it Babylon. Okay?
Right.
Like I said, it's a derogatory, you know, like you, maybe if you'd say San Francisco, oh, it's like a little Sodom and Gomorrah. It's a, you know, showing the spiritual state of the city of Jerusalem. Okay, so this is the first time he says the great city. He doesn't give it by name or whatever. He just says, oh, the great city. And then describes it to let you know what he's talking about. He calls Jerusalem the great city. Okay, at the end he just calls it the city. Verse 13. Okay, yeah, the city. Alright, so first we see that, and then in chapter 16, oh, and back in 11, there was the earthquake in the great city, and people were destroyed and all that. And then Revelation 16, verse 16-18, there was lightning, thundering, a great earthquake, such as has not been since there was an earth. So great was the earthquake, and so mighty, and the great city split into three parts. Once again, earthquake, great city, just like he said in chapter 11, great earthquake, great city. Okay? And Babylon the Great was remembered before God. Now, okay, the first time, that was the first mention of the great city, chapter 11, and it's positively identified as Jerusalem. Now he mentions the great city again, with no hint that he's talking about a different great city. Okay? The great city, mixed with the earthquake. And then when we get here, I said, I think it's either six or seven times Babylon is called the great city, specifically 17 and verse 18. The woman which you saw is the great city. And he uses the article, the, not a great city, as if this is one great city and that's another great city. So that's one thing would tend for me, lead me to think it's identify with the first great city he was talking about. Okay, I mentioned the earthquake and the great city, both times destroys the great city. Okay, 17 and verse 6. The woman which you saw, I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses. Where were the two witnesses killed?
Right.
Chapter 11. Jerusalem. Okay? Not only that, Jesus, I think it's in Luke, I forget which chapter, calls Jerusalem, you know, you which kill the prophets. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who stone the prophets, or something like that. So, and she's drunk with the blood of the witnesses. Okay, and the two witnesses in chapter 11 were killed in Jerusalem. Oh, Luke 13:34. Okay. Yeah, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who stoned the prophets. Okay, 18:24 also says she had the blood of the prophets. Of prophets. Okay, 18:24. In her was found the blood of prophets and of saints, and all have his name on the earth. Jesus called Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets. The fact that John was marveled greatly at her. I mean, Jerusalem was the holy city of David. And he was, whatever this harlot was, he was very taken by shock that this to see it. And if the theory holds true that it was Jerusalem, that would definitely shake up the good Jew.
I'll just
write them down. I mentioned Rome would be too obvious, some think, and this is, you need wisdom to understand it. It's called a mystery and stuff like that. Rome would be too much of a giveaway. 2 Thessalonians 2 and 4, Paul says the Antichrist rules from God's temple. Okay, you have the woman sitting on the beast together. The Antichrist is going to rule from God's temple, which is in Jerusalem. That's his headquarters for that second 3.5 year period. Okay, so it seemed to make sense that it would be Jerusalem. the Antichrist's girlfriend is called a whore. That's the word, prostitute. King James used the word whore. Christ's bride is a pure virgin, the New Jerusalem, the church. Okay, you've got this literal Old Jerusalem compared to New Jerusalem and the church. Bride of Christ, girlfriend of the beast. And in the Old Testament, several places, Isaiah 1:21. Jeremiah chapter 3, Hosea, the whole book, Israel is said to have played the harlot over and over again. God says, you're not faithful, you are playing the harlot. So, this is the ultimate. Plus, I can think of it more as, Israel was supposed to be God's bride in the Old Testament, and she was unfaithful over and over. Now she's done, the worst possible and shacked up with the Antichrist, the worst possible person. One of my teachers in seminary said it's, the Jews have sold their soul to Hitler. They've elected Hitler to be their president and saying, we want you instead, is basically what they've done. So it would seem to make a lot of sense that it would be pictured as Jerusalem being the capital of Israel as a whole, who is in alliance with the Antichrist. Yet, God will still forgive her. In the end, that in reading Romans 11, Israel is saved and turned back to God. Have you ever read the book of Hosea? The analogy he tells him, go marry a woman that's going to be unfaithful to you, so you can understand what it feels like to love someone who's unfaithful. And this is the ultimate picture of God's love where, like I said, they've done the worst possible they can do. They have joined up with God's ultimate arch enemy, and God still loves and forgives them. So, all right. Anyway, those are the two. I haven't heard any way to identify. I don't know. I'm gonna look into it more. But the seven hills in Jerusalem, I don't know if there's any idea that Jerusalem sits on seven hills or not. But to me, those are the only two major opinions that I think hold water. It's a city. The text is very clear on that. It calls a great city over and over and over. The only candidates I see, Jerusalem, Rome, and then some identify it as literal Babylon. All right, okay, he mentions kings, seven kings in succession. one, where did he say that? One is now, and one is to come.
One is to
come. Mm.
Verse 10.
Oh, verse 10. Okay. The seven, yeah, verse 9, the seven heads are seven mountains, which the woman says, and they are seven kings. They also represent seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come. Okay? If you're going to try to identify this with the Caesars, you know, who had gone, there's no way to, some have done that, saying, okay, he's telling them, you know, little, this is one, there's a king now, there's been five, there's no way to match that up with the Caesars who lived in John's time. Any way you count it, it's too many or it's too few to say John's living during the time of the sixth. Some have said, remember in Daniel we had the four successive empires, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. Okay? And here the angel tells them, five have fallen, one is, so they're on number six right now. Some have taken those four and then saying the two major dynasties before that were Egypt and then Assyria. So you have Egypt, Assyria, and then Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. So the one which now is number six would be the Roman Empire during John's time.
The revived? Oh, no, not the revived. John's time.
Yeah, the one that's still there. Okay. That seems to have the most credence to me. Okay. And then verse 18, the whole thing is just the cry, the lament over Babylon. The people of the earth loved it so much, you know, it's provided a lot of immorality and a very immoral lifestyle, and they were sad to see her go. The whole, most of the chapter is just them crying, well, mostly, yeah, verse 9 on, them crying over Babylon. And over it says, no longer, there will no longer be anything in you. She's destroyed.
They're crying over Babylon?
Yeah. Over the city was. Because the city provide a lot of immorality.
The world is crying?
Because
mm-hmm. The bulk of the world doesn't like Jerusalem.
The kings of the earth who committed acts, who committed immorality and lived essentially the world. Yeah, but you've got to figure, by this time, the Antichrist has taken over and is ruling from Jerusalem,
okay.
Not the Jewish people,
right.
The city,
right.
Which if he's, this is his headquarters,
right. Right.
And he is called the man of lawlessness, and he's called the immoral person in Daniel, and stuff like that. Jesus said, because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. So it's
right.
A time of, you know, live it up type of a lifestyle. So, and you know, the Antichrist headquarters being seem to be the headquarters. So I mean, that's another reason what with this whole picture, you know, Jerusalem you'd expect to be the good holy city, and what has she become?
Right.
You know, in the end here. And like there's difficulties to both views, but I don't know. Anyway, they're crying over her. Notice the end of verse 13, all the things which were sold in this city, cinnamon and spice and incense,
mm-hmm.
Olive oil, horses and chariots, and bodies and souls of men.
What verse you said?
13?
Chapter 18.
18:13.
Oh,
18:13. Yeah. Bodies and souls of men. You know what? I don't. I've got it somewhere, but somewhere in the Old Testament it talks about people selling, and it's, you know, predictive of the end times. People selling young boys and girls for. Let me find. Oh.
Talking about Ezekiel. 27:13.
What's it say?
Ezekiel. They traded the persons of men and vessels, the brass, in the market.
No.
27:13.
Joel 3 and 3. They've cast lots for my people, have given a boy for a harlot, and sold a girl for wine that they might drink. You know, Joel's talking about the last days a lot. People selling boys and girls for wine, for prostitutes, for whatever. Maybe that's what this is talking about, bodies and souls of them. Joel 3 and 3, and the one in Revelation is 18 and 13.
I definitely believe we're going in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How do you see
And then look, you see that the people of the earth saying, oh, we missed Babylon, she was so nice and we loved it so much and she's gone. Verse 20, it says, rejoice over her, O heaven, and you saints and apostles and prophets, because God has pronounced judgment for you against her. So we see him saying, remember, because she killed the saints. And all that. Oh, another thing, let me point out. Look at verse 4, okay, right when they're about to destroy it. 18 and verse 4, I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you may not participate in her sins, and you may not receive of her plagues, for her sins have piled up as high as heaven. God remembered her iniquities. He was going to destroy it. So maybe we see some of God's people falling into sin here. And one last call from God. Hey, get out of that, because it's going to be destroyed. And he wants to save it. Okay? So I mentioned, okay, verse 20, he says, our opinion should be to rejoice. And in verse chapter 19, you see the other side. After these things, I heard a great voice, 19 verse 1. Hallelujah, salvation and glory and power to our God, because his judgments are true and righteous. For he has judged the great harlot, who was corrupting the earth with her immorality. He's avenged the blood of his bondservants on her. I heard another second time, it says, hallelujah, her smoke rises up forever and ever. And in 24 hours, they fall down, and they give God praise. The people of the earth are crying over the sinful city that's been destroyed. In heaven, they are rejoicing and giving thanks. Okay? And this is where now everything's done. We see the time of Christ's return pulling up. Let us rejoice and give glory to him. The marriage of his lamb has come. His bride has made herself ready. She was given fine linen, bright and clean, which are the righteous acts of the saints. Verse 11, I saw heaven open. There's the white horse that I mentioned before. He who sat upon it is called faithful and true. In righteousness he judges and wages war. His eyes are like fire. On his head are many, the word diadems, with some translations of reason, crowns, but a different crown from the other crown. In chapter 6, many diadems. He had a name written on him which no one knows except he himself. He's got a robe which is dipped in blood. His name is called the Word of God. Remember what John wrote in his gospel? In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. The armies which are in heaven, clothed in fine linen, white and clean, were following him on white horses. I believe the heavenly army here is a reference to the angels of heaven. Some would see it differently. From his mouth is a sharp sword. Okay, and that represents what? His word. Okay, by his word he fights and conquers. He just needs to speak it and it's done. So that he may smite the nations, and he will rule them with the rod of iron. Okay, he's going to smite them, then discipline them first, and then he's going to come back and rule. He treads the winepress. Remember, we read about that, chapter 14, the fierce wrath of God the Almighty. And on his robe and on his thigh, he has a name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's our Savior right there. King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Then an angel telling all the birds, come to the great supper of God. There's going to be a lot of kings and commanders and stuff. We're going to be killed. First, look at verse 19. I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies assembled to make war against him who sat upon the horse and against his army. Could you imagine? Jesus appears in heaven, comes riding down with an army of angels behind him, and people getting ready to fight. And that's what they're going to do, because they have sold their allegiance to the Antichrist, and they follow him, and they do what he says. They're going to try and fight Jesus, but they're not going to be successful. Verse 20, the beast was seized, with him the false prophets, who performed all the miracles. They were thrown alive into the lake of which burns with fire and brimstone. Okay? And the rest were killed with the sword. The rest who were fighting against him. So he killed with the sword. Which came out of his mouth of him who sat upon the horse. I mentioned that the sword out of his mouth looks like it represents his word. You know, Jesus fights by his word. Okay? And that's where Armageddon takes place. That great battle. As he grabs the Antichrist and the false prophet, they're taken alive and thrown into the bottomless pit immediately. Okay. Then we covered before the millennium. So we read about that in the next few verses of chapter 20. We discussed different millennial views. I'm going to go back over it again. 1,000 years, Satan comes back and gathers people together for another war if you're pre-mill, or the same war if you're amill. Okay? Okay, then verse 11, this is the great judgment. Judgment day. I saw a white throne and him who sat on it, from whose presence earth and heaven ran away. I saw the dead, small and great, standing before the throne. And books were open. Which books do you think were open? Jesus says, my word will judge you in the last day.
That's right.
Okay? So that's why I had to emphasize so strongly, we got to get what we teach out of the book. Because when it's all said and done, this is what we're judged out of. Not my opinion, not your opinion, not someone's tradition, but this book. The books were open. And another book was open, which was the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the books, according to their deeds. Sea gave up the dead. Death and Hades, hell, gave up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every one of them, according to their works. Death and Hades are thrown into the lake of fire. This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. So you see this judgment, both based on works, and yet based upon, are you in the book of life or not? Okay? It seems what's going on here is, number one, nobody, we talked about this just in Romans the other day, nobody lives up, enough to God's commandments to make it on their own. So you're only saved if you're in the book of life, you got the blood of Jesus Christ on your life. But also, the degree of punishment seems to be connected with what you did. Jesus said, I think he was talking to the Jews in Jerusalem, he says, it will be more tolerable for Sodom in the day of judgment than for you. Now, Sodom was a more immoral city, but they had more truth and rejected it. So he says, it's going to be more tolerable for Sodom than it is for you, because you knew. They had Jesus walking in their presence and rejected him. And another place tells a parable about, one servant being beaten with many stripes, and another servant being beaten with few stripes. So based upon these and other things, it seems there will be degrees of punishment for those who, like my teacher always used to say, I don't think that just the average, Joe Blow is going to get the same type of punishment as an Adolf Hitler, or someone that's done that much wrong. They are judged according to their works, it
right.
says. But no person is saved on the basis of their works. Okay? But there does seem to be degrees of punishment. Okay, then after that, I saw a new heaven, and this is what it all leads up to, folks. These last two chapters is what our hope is, what gives us, he went on describing how bad things are going to get, but this is the light at the end that we're looking for. So a new heaven and a new earth. The first heaven, the first earth were passed away, and there's no more sea. I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, ready as a bride adorned for her husband. Heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the tabernacle or the dwelling of God is among men. He shall dwell among them. They shall be his people, and God himself shall be among them." Over and over in the Old Testament, you see God foretelling that he wants to dwell among the people. He wants to, I will be their God. They will be my people. Okay? Jesus said also his name will be called Emmanuel, which means
God with us.
Right. God became a man so he could dwell among us. Now, he left for a while, but he's coming back, to rule the earth and dwell among people. We want to be nice to have God present with us and in control. And you don't got to worry about that. It's all done. Verse 4, okay. He shall wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall no longer be any death. There shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. All that will be done away with once he makes all things new. And he who sits on the throne said, "Behold, I make all things new." It's somewhere it says there's no more curse. Did I skip over that?
I haven't seen that.
Okay. It says, "I make all things new." And then he said, "Write, for these words are faithful and true." He said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who thirsts from the spring of the water of life freely, without cost, without anything." He gives it out for free. "He who overcomes shall inherit these things. I will be his God, and he will be my son." I won't get into it too much, but this is a powerful oneness passage. Everything that he has said so far, I can show you verse by verse, points to Jesus being the speaker. I'm the Alpha, the Omega, faithful and true. We just read in the last chapter talking about Jesus. A bunch of different things. And then he says, "I will be his God. They will be my son." So it is the Father. Okay? Same person. But for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. That's the hope of the believer, but there's also that warning for those who are not. And it seems to be very black and white, one or the other. Then he goes on. He says one of the seven angels says, "I'm going to show you the bride, the Lamb's wife, the New Jerusalem," which that is the ultimate dwelling place of the believer, is this New Jerusalem. Jesus said, "I go to prepare a place for you. In my Father's house are many mansions, and I will come back." Hebrews 11 talks about, he says, even Abraham was looking for a city whose builder and maker was God. Okay, this is what we're ultimately looking forward to, this new Jerusalem, the holy city, coming down out of heaven from God. As I'm going to describe, its gates, great and high. Verse 16, "The city is laid out like a square, its length as great as its width." He measures it, which comes out to 1,500 miles in our measurements. He says its length, width, and height are equal. So it's like the city is kind of like a big cube. It's as high as it is long as it is wide. I drive back and forth to California, which is our whole country is, I mean, if you go just distance across, is a little bit less than 300 miles. So if you figure half the size of our country across, half the United States, a little bit more actually.
The United States is more than 300 miles.
3,000. 3,000, sorry. Mm-hmm. This is 1,500,
right,
which is half of 3,000. Okay, that's what I meant. 3,000 miles. So about half that, you know, half the distance of our country across is how big this city is, wide by length, by height, in every direction. Okay? So it's very huge.
It's not too big. It's not too big. You say from Mississippi to the coastline, or from Mississippi to California, that's not big.
But is that so this way, and this way?
It's in every direction. Yeah.
Stack it up.
And
I gotta find an apartment.
This is the city which streets are paved with gold. Verse 21, the streets are paved with gold. 22, I didn't see a temple because God is its temple. 23, it doesn't need a light because the glory of God lights it up. Okay, 24, the nation shall walk by its lights, and the kings of the earth bring their glory into it. What I see, believe is going on here, remember it says, you know, we will be kings and priests, we will reign with him. That the New Jerusalem is the new world capital, okay? And if, you know, some of us will be the kings who will reign with him, we'll be reigning in different places, and we, you know, go to capital once every so often, or maybe we stay there a while, or maybe we have Congress and whatever, I don't know. But Jesus talked about in one parable, you know, the one who, you know, the guy who did so much with his talents, he says, you're going to be over five cities.
Right.
The other guy, you're over 10 cities. Says, we will be kings and priests. Maybe there's other job descriptions as well, but even everybody's a king or a priest.
Over.
People. You know, as a priest.
After all these people, he's already judged them, you know, when they go left or right, you know, you're saved or you're not.
Yeah, that's another issue. Notice what one we just read about the great white throne judgment. He said, I saw the dead, which were small and great, standing before God. Didn't say what happened to the living. If you look look at 22, verses 14 and 15. Verse 14, blessed are those who wash their robes, that they may have the right to the tree of life, and may enter by the gates into the city. Because outside are the dogs and sorcerers and immoral persons and the murderers and idolaters and everyone who loves and practices a lie. It seems that, and I am, let me know that a while back about, we were talking about if we're the kings, where are all the people we're ruling over? This I am definitely in a minority on, but based on this and other things, I believe there will always be mortals, people. The one Jesus comes back and claims his bride, you know, he's taking out a number to be his people, which will rule and reign with him and be kings and priests and all this. But then after that there will always be mortals, but that God will put his people in leadership and in judgment. You know, kings and priests, maybe there will be other positions besides being a king or a priest. What does a priest do? A priest represents the people to God. You know, they were the representative of the people.
My mind is like not handling this. If there's going to be other people on this earth that, you know, whatever, this New Jerusalem, and we're over them, is there still sin? Because it says right here, didn't you just read?
Verse 15.
Without our dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters.
Outside of the city.
So this New Jerusalem, and then outside of the city limits, you know, there's another.
There's regular people, is what it seems to me, Jen. Like I said, to me that's very clear that there's, of course, not that, you know. I mean, the world. Peter says that in the new heavens and the new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. So it's going to be characterized by righteousness because Jesus is ruling from the capital, and his saints, his people, are ruling everywhere else. But okay, that
the devil's casting all the demons are in, you know, how can there be sin?
Because mankind has a choice. Like I said, I'm
tempting him.
You still have yourself, Jen. And we talked about the three enemies.
Yes, but it's so hard to understand this.
Well, Jen, like I said, I'm definitely in a minority in believing that. But to me, I mean, you know, what do you do with this?
Doesn't it say in one of the scriptures that when we rise up with Christ, we'll have a glorified body? Just us, or is that also these people here?
Yeah, we will have.
People here we're ruling over, are they going to be glorified also, or are they just going to be flesh like this? Will they die?
That's it. I think. That's a question that doesn't answer for us.
It's just so hard to believe that, you know, like after God's thrown the devil away, and you would think it would just be people who worship God all the time, and then we're going to be ruling over other people. Is that like God makes a whole other earth and does it all over again?
So there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth.
If there's a new earth, who's going to live on the new, you know? Like I said, most would disagree with what I'm telling. But number one, we're kings. If we're all chiefs, we're the Indians. You know, if everyone who's saved becomes kings and priests, who do we rule over? Number two, the fact that we're priests. What does a priest do? A priest represents the people. The priest comes before God on behalf of the people. That's what a priest does. He comes before God in representation of the common people. Number three, you know, right here where it says, whoever goes into the city, you know, they're going to be happy because outside are these people who still sin. Some puts, when the angel goes to show them the New Jerusalem, from